Welcome back to Three Decades of Tragedy, History of the 30 Years War. So last time I covered the failure of Saxony in negotiating with Sweden, their influence failing to create a peace, and Sweden and France grew closer with the Treaty of Wismar, which, even if not ratified by Sweden, gave Sweden more financial support from France and drew France further into the war and put the two as allies for the purposes of fighting against the Habsburgs. And lastly, I covered the Battle of Wittstock, which resulted in a strategic victory by the Swedes, preserving their last main army, which kept Sweden in the fight, allowing Oxenstierna to secure his position back home and keep up hard negotiations while he left representatives back in the German homeland. Well, the German lands. But with that covered, let's get started. On a guy you'd think would come up more often, Pope Urban VIII was keeping track of all this and was horrified by the suffering and death created by the war. But the issue he ran into was he couldn't support either side, so he had to stick with acting like a disappointed father, trying to chide the Catholics to unify against the Protestants. He couldn't really throw his hat up at the Habsburgs because that would make them appear more influential and powerful with the Pope being on their side. So despite many countries being Catholic, the Habsburgs being more powerful, or at least being perceived as having more papal authority or influence, would piss off people. So like I said, he had to kind of chide the Catholics to try to get them to unify against the Protestants. And also during this time period, the Papal States were focusing on expanding their own power in Italy, so he wasn't really able to focus on the 30 Years' War, as it really wasn't touching him, besides from some conflicts in northern Italy, which I mentioned with the whole France versus Spain. But France going to war with Spain forced him to act, since that would mean there would be fighting in northern Italy. Cardinal Gennetti was named as a legate, being the representative of the Pope for various official needs. But Ferdinand was not happy about the Pope meddling in the diplomacy of the war, especially because the Imperials had accepted the need to make concessions at the expense of the Catholic churches and lands in the HRE, such as not getting them back land to keep other noble people happy. So a meeting was organized on August 18th, 1635, though there was a few snags in that. The Pope refused to invite the Protestants, and France, a Catholic nation, wouldn't attend until their allies were invited. It took nearly a year, but Venice agreed to mediate as a third party, and a peace congress was agreed on and would meet in Cologne on October 22nd, 1636. Yeah, you can see the whole conflict of everyone was trying to bring up their interests and the Pope couldn't really recognize the Protestants, even though they were definitely much more secure compared to older times. But funny enough, they weren't the only people looking for a peace, be it large or small. Frederick V's son, Carl Ludwig, had turned 18 and could theoretically inherit his father's land, which I remind you was controlled by Maximilian, who was married to the Emperor's daughter, and that was a whole complex issue, or could be. Charles I of England spent £70,000 on an embassy to secure his rights, which £70,000 back then was a lot more than £70,000 today. I don't have the exact number, but a lot. But Maximilian and Ferdinand had already resolved this whole issue years ago, and they refused to cooperate on this, the initial rebellion, way in the rearview mirror at this point. Yes, it started this whole thing, but that whole small conflict over church rights and the right to and the rights for Protestants to worship was well at the window at this point. Chaos had happened. And it was unrealistic for anyone to try to assert the rights of Carl. So this basically turned into an extended sightseeing tour of Europe, generally looking at the areas that weren't brutalized by the war. So all in all, that ended in failure, but it showed that England was still keeping track of what was going on at the very least. France did actually agree to the talks in Cologne, but they did not send a representative. But on the other side, Ferdinand's envoys didn't show up until April 1637, France close after, showing both men really didn't have peace in mind, not any sort of long-term agreement, as both sides wanted what they wanted. Richelieu did send terms, though. He was prepared to renounce Alsace and agreed to talk about Lorraine, but Ferdinand had to recognize the French protectorate over Metz, Toul, and Verdun, and admit German princes to the talk. Keep in mind, Verdun and some of those lands became part of France later on, but this is not the France that we know today, or at least completely the territory we know today. And getting the German princes involved was a way for France to show their increasing influence in the HRE, as well as to undermine the Peace of Prague by being able to influence individual actors within the HRE compared to the Emperor as a whole, considering the policy the Emperor wanted to put with the Peace of Prague as only he could negotiate for major policy and diplomacy. This did piss off the Habsburgs, as Ferdinand was expecting the military situation to improve, giving him, or at least his son, a better negotiating position, as I mentioned before, but Ferdinand was in failing health at this point. But since the Protestants weren't recognized as full partners, aka they were still treated as not equal to the Catholics, especially since the Danish had been keeping another option open at Hamburg since 1633, which again, went nowhere, but they were still trying. The Pope didn't fully give up on the idea of trying, letting officials try to mediate to little to no success throughout the years, and by the early 1640s, they had given up entirely, as the war would shift in differently by that point, which we will cover when we cover the, what, 3 years? 3-4 years it takes to get to that point. The main point I want to get across this was both sides were too involved in waiting for the military situation to improve, to get better terms, to get a better foot to negotiate, which meant no one was really willing to act on peace until they were winning so they could get their terms. Which, realpolitik, that makes sense, but when millions of people are dying and starving in that, it just extends the suffering. And those in a worse position were just trying to hold out until they got better, like Sweden, who was waiting for France to build up their army, become more, you know, experienced, and be able to reinforce them better, as well as wait for reinforcements from Sweden. But keep in mind, this wasn't the only council going on. There's another big council that happened in 1636, which was the Regensburg Electoral Council. The Regensburg Electoral Council started on September 15th, 1636, ending on January 23rd of 1637. This was the first council, well, first big official council since 1630, and its main intention was to elect Archduke Ferdinand to the title of the King of the Romans, which was the official title of the emperor. Which, he wouldn't be the emperor yet, but it was officially announced he would become the emperor. He was the official heir. Several princes and electors were there, along with envoys from countries like Denmark, Poland, France, Spain, and the papacy. France wasn't trying to overthrow the monarchy, as it seems weird that they'd be there since they were enemies of the Habsburgs, but they didn't want to really show that they were against the Habsburgs or want to show that they wanted to get rid of them, as that was a step too far for anyone. They wanted to show them up and force them to accept humiliating terms, but France still wanted them to exist. It sets a bad precedent to try to wipe out other noble houses and other major ruling dynasties. The emperor wanted to consolidate the Peace of Prague, and Spain wanted to get the HRA to honor the Treaty of Ettersdorf, which would get him more support against France, which the emperor of the HRE was not exactly a fan of, as I've talked about in earlier episodes. There was very much the mood of keep the war separate, even though they were kind of blending together in cases. He even paid 209,000 florins to Bavaria, Mainz, Cologne, and Saxony, which, granted, were already going to support the duke, but it smoothed the process to allow the princes to reject the Dutch's call for the empire to stay neutral in the war against the Dutch, which was the Spanish war against the Dutch, because if the empire agreed to that, they wouldn't support the Spanish against the Dutch, which Spain desperately needed, as the war was not necessarily in their favor. France is also regarded as an enemy, the demand towards it telling Richelieu and the king to return Metz, Toul, and Verdun, which I noted was what France wanted to be protectors of. So again, they're both across purposes. I should note that the actual enthusiasm for fighting France was muted, and Ferdinand insisted that the war against France was separate from the war in Germany, although it took a bit of coercion to convince the electors to agree to that. Like I say, this war is a rat's nest of wars, so there's a reason why it's easier to call it the 30 Years' War than break it down into the France versus Spain, France versus the HRE, Spain versus the Dutch, the war in Germany. It's just a mouthful and it's much easier to understand as a collection of wars, kind of like the Cold War was a collection of smaller conflicts that was between the US and the Soviets. It was still funny France was here, even though they were basically considered an enemy, but one of the rules of diplomacy that was generally universal across most of the world was don't shoot the messenger and representatives. It's a bad look to kill diplomats. Usually, it would make you look bad at a minimum, or it would start war. See the Mongols when they sent embassies to Khwarezm. That did not end well for them. But seeing as they needed electors, Spain released Sauterne, the guy they had held hostage I mentioned a couple episodes ago, to keep from looking like they were interfering with the empire, as he was an official representative of the empire of some degree. This suspended the talks over Trier, and Johann George and Brandenburg both left the Congress, leaving others to represent them, claiming they needed to go back to the war front even though they didn't really need to. But one issue no one could come up with an alternative to, brought up by Johann George, was that German Protestants would have to pay for the Swedes to leave, which would upset them, as it left the Catholics out and all the burdens in one group, which I will explain a little bit at the end as it basically becomes official policy, or at least what the emperor decides to do. Another interesting fact I found was the loss at Wittstock had somehow strengthened Ferdinand's support due to the occupation of Brandenburg, creating the idea that Oxenstierna was not really open to negotiation on their terms, which was true as we've seen. George Wilhelm had fled to Prussia and had created a government in exile, so to speak, and opened negotiations to create a new alliance with the Imperials by November, mainly to keep the Emperor from sacrificing Pomerania for peace, potentially. The death of Duke Boguslav also sped that up, a new alliance being formed by June 22nd, 1637. This alliance's terms were that George Wilhelm would financially get supported by the empire, but they would have to raise an army of troops, a large corps. It was smaller than the others, around 11,000, and did not have the autonomy of the other people I mentioned in previous episodes. So they had to swear loyalty to the Emperor and the HRE. It was a less secure area in army, but it was 11,000 more men for the Imperials to have, and it showed how the Alliance wasn't as strong as other German powers, and how much political authority and influence you had definitely controlled how much autonomy you would have as an individual army, as there's, like, four of them that are, like, special dispensation to not have to follow or swear loyalty to the Emperor. Getting Brandenburg also created more benefits to the Emperor, as it extended the financial agreement to the Emperor for the war, as agreed upon by the elect. And Ferdinand, his son, was elected the King of the Romans by December 1636, though it taking 3 months for this to be decided was kind of funny, as it's just, I don't want to imagine what they're all talking about waiting just to finally vote on this. I mean, some of it was probably travel time, but it's still funny to me. This is actually just in time, as the Emperor died a month later, making the new Emperor Ferdinand III. Which, from now on, if I say Ferdinand, I will mean Ferdinand III. I'll give a biography next week, or next time. So, just be prepared for that. And one condition that he had to accept to become the Emperor was he had to consult the electors whenever he wanted to use the Imperial Ban, which limited the power that his father had had. The Imperial Ban was making people outlaws, and this would allow the higher class nobility to control the Emperor for good or for ill. It also meant the ban couldn't necessarily be used as ban hammer happy in modern internet terms. Imagine if you get hit by the ban hammer and you became a criminal IRL. That's just a funny thought. But with his election, tied with the other events, this effectively cut off another chance for peace. This was a highly tense moment, and as little chance as it was likely to succeed, this was another chance. It would have saved people money, men, and destruction, but everyone was too caught up in real politique to look at the big picture. Which is easier said than done, because we have 2020, we see the war. Them, they had seen some destruction, but they all thought they could get a better advantage, they could get a better position, so it all made sense. Johann George's attempts were also being continually stifled, leaving Saxony a failure as a negotiator, and it was agreed that the Protestants would pay for the cost of the war in getting Sweden out, since they had invited him in allegedly, which we know was not exactly what happened, as Sweden kind of took Pomerania by force, even if it was supposedly under the threat of gunboat diplomacy, which was diplomacy. And by 1637, Johann George had finally given up on negotiating any remaining peace talks that remained were technically there to show that the sides were trying, but this effectively meant nothing. This war was about to become explosive again, and there's so much here that made it hard to talk peace, especially with the religion thrown in, which was still an important part of understanding the culture and conflict of this war, even if it wasn't the underlying issue here. And with the new emperor, he needed to start out on a strong foot, so trying to get the edge in negotiations would be a good start, even if it caused another decade of war, as he wanted to be someone to look strong, not immediately negotiating for a weaker peace. But that's it for this week, and next week we start another few years of intense fighting, as it's gonna get messy again. I want to thank you all for listening, for keeping me coming back to the work on this. Social media links will be in the description box or in the links themselves. You can email me at 3decot@gmail.com. Reminder that our Patreon, thanks to those who support me, interview and spread the word. I love when I get good reviews and comments, and I'll see you guys next time.